afternoon convening the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services. And if my voice fades, then just forgive me. It just means I'm not going to get a chance to talk as much as I usually do.
Oh, darn.
This is the Thursday, June 26, 2003. We're almost into July. And just to remind everyone, Rosie and Rosette's there, which is anxiously waiting to collect dollars. And it's kind of interesting that Katie Keene sent me a note the other day to remind me that perhaps when I'm doing the, when we're talking about the finding, that we don't let the individual speak further until the money gets into Rosie. So just wanted you to know that that's coming from the agency side who's making those recommendations. So she wants to make certain that we have adequate funds to give to the Oregon Food Bank. When we left yesterday, we were in work session on House Bill 5030, and we are back in work session on House Bill 5030. And I know that we need a couple more members to come before we have a quorum. Senator Gordley's on the way. And I am assuming that Representative G. Smith is probably on his way.
I assume so.
And probably Representative Bates is also. So, Ms. Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In front of you, you have a one-page memo between yesterday and today when we left off on the department-wide support services budget. We found some additional savings from the position vacancies in repricing those position vacancies. So the budget that you have before you today is about $200,000 general fund less than what you were looking at yesterday, but we didn't expect that any of you would mind that little adjustment.
Not at all.
So what this memo summarizes is what we would ask that the subcommittee do at this time, which would be to approve the adjusted budget for department-wide support services, and the numbers are indicated there. It's a $359,874,021 total fund budget, 909 positions, 908.17 FTE. And then there were two budget notes that were proposed that we would also recommend that you approve at this time. And as we talked about yesterday, final action on this piece of the Department of Human Services budget and the other pieces will happen at some later date.
Madam Chair.
Senator Carter.
I move the...
We need to take it in two sections.
That's all. I was just looking at
the approval of the adjustment.
I approved, Madam Chair, the adjusted budget for Department of Human Services and with LFO's recommendation.
Senator Carter recommends approval of the adjusted budget for the department-wide support services as outlined by Legislative Fiscal Office. Are there any objections? Approved.
Thank you.
Senator Carter.
I'd like to move the two budget notes that are presented on the page from LFO regarding directions for the department.
Senator Carter recommends approval of the two budget notes, the as presented by Legislative Fiscal Office, the one that deals with the study of the staffing to supervisor to non-supervised staff ratio and the department's accounting structure in orbit. Are there any objections? That's good. So we've got that one done. With that, we will begin the work session on House Bill 5030, the Department of Human Services, Children, Adults, and Families. And you should have received that information yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I left that package up there.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And I noticed that Ramona is with us, Foley, and Jim is with us, Neely. And just in case I understand, I know that the Director Jean Thorne is with us also, but she may have to go on to bigger and better things a little later down in the LFO. Okay. And I'm hearing from the one who's the person who knows about keeping your voice. She tells me to speak softly so I don't ruin it. That's our song mistress.
I keep hearing that big
thing. Yeah, but you know what? I still have that.
I forgot about that.
Oh, man.
So demonstrative.
Yeah. Okay,
get it
out. I've got a pocket knife.
Sounds just like my dad. Just
last evening, we had our six health committees, and this one, we had our Siny Die party. And I noticed I must have gotten a splinter or something, and so Representative Bates, who's also Dr. Bates, said that he would take care of it today. So I was just reminding him of this sliver. And he was puncturing, well, it hurt because it's kind of a little inflamed. And thank you, Senator Morris. I don't need a knife to excise it.
When Senator Morris said that, it reminded me of my father, because his kids out on the farm, you know, doing everything you're not supposed to be doing, always had stickers. And Dad says, go like this and play. I'll get that out for you. Oh, no, it's not as bad as what we thought it was.
And Pam is also with us. So with that, Ms. Baker, and I will try to keep my voice.
Okay. I'll be working from the packet that I distributed to your offices yesterday. Again, the first part of the memo summarizes the governor's budget for this program. Basically, the governor's budget carried forward actions that were made after the fifth special session in terms of programmatic reductions. And the governor's budget also eliminated all of the general fund inflation increases that would have otherwise been built into the budget for this program. There is one other policy package in the governor's budget, and that relates to the transfer of the child support program to Department of Justice. And we are recommending approval of that package based on the passage of the substantive legislation that makes that transfer. The vacant position analysis we did, this budget unit had 42 unduplicated counted positions. I've indicated there what the status of those positions were. 13 were filled already. 16 were either being recruited for or recruitment was planned. There was one that was providing federally mandated levels of service, and there was a new position during the interim associated with the Oregon Health Plan 2 waiver that was vacant, and that will be eliminated as part of the co-chair's reductions. So we're recommending 11 vacant positions be eliminated, and the savings is noted on our spreadsheet, and we'll cover that in a minute.
Question?
Representative Smith?
Is the 11 in addition to the 7 in the governor's budget?
The 11 is in addition to the 7 positions in that policy package?
Yeah.
Is that the question?
Yeah.
Yes.
So it would be a total of 18.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Although the exercise that the starting point for the count of our vacant position analysis was the governor's budget.
Mm-hmm.
So those 7 were already out of the governor's budget total.
And then you had an additional 11.
Right.
But I'm looking at it from the total. It would be a total of 18 that would be eliminated.
Right. In fact, there are more because there's other issues, but yes.
Thank you.
Then on top of the second page of the memo, it references our spreadsheets that summarize the reshoot adjustments and then the other recommendations that we're making. If you go to the long spreadsheet page, it shows you the dollar values of most of the reshoot adjustments. The first page and a quarter of that are all caseload and other adjustments that the agency has requested in their reshoot of the governor's budget. So I won't go over all of the caseload adjustments. The department had sent me a two-pager that showed for the various programs that were affected by the reshoot what the total funding levels were, so you can see how the reshoot affects that funding level that was in the governor's budget, and then some comparative information for 2001-2003. I thought that would be helpful for you. I do want to point out that in the rebalance plan for the 01-03 budget, the department identified $5.7 million of TANF funding that they would be carrying forward into the 2003-2005 budget. And in their reshoot request, they've used that funding in the first line of this spreadsheet, the TANF basic caseload, and then in the third line, the domestic violence emergency assistance program growth. So that TANF funding is spoken for, in effect, in their reshoot request. And you'll note there that the increase in domestic violence emergency assistance is a significant one, and I'll talk about that as an issue a little later. The other piece that I would highlight for you on this first page, if you go down 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I should have numbered these. If you go down 8 issues on the first page, correction to package 092 for system of care add back. As you'll remember, system of care in this budget relates to the flexible funding that's provided for child welfare services. And this was part of an agreement several years back with the Juvenile Rights Project in terms of how the agency, how the state takes care of children in foster care or at risk of foster care. In the governor's budget, there was about $12 million in flexible funding and about $2 million in staffing in the community human services budget. Initially in budget development, all of that funding, all of the flexible funding was reduced. When there was $5 million available to be added back, it was split $3 million added back in children, adults, and families, and $2 million added back in community human services. However, the reduction had not actually been made in community human services. So what this does is take the amount, the $2 million that was in community human services budget, to replace a reduction that wasn't made and move it to where it needed to be in this children, adults, and families budget. So that corrects what the intention of the governor's add back was, and so it's reflected here as a $2 million add. The net effect, though, is that instead of a total of $5 million in the budget now for system of care between flexible funds and staffing, there's now $7 million. There's $5 million of flexible funds plus the $2 million in staffing that you'll see in community human services. So I know as there have been discussions about potential add-back, system of care is an issue, and we've been looking at a $9.4 million add-back needed to fully restore those system of care flexible funds. But the net effect of this correction would mean that you would only need $7.4 million then to fully restore those flexible funds. So have I sufficiently confused everybody?
Question. What is the discussion, or have you had a discussion, Ramona, with the juvenile rights folks respecting this particular issue?
Chair Witters, my name is Ramona Foley for the record. I'm Assistant Director at DHS for Children, Adults, and Families.
That's a rosy money.
Oh, yes, thank you.
She's prepared.
Right out of the hopper. Department of Human Services.
Thank you, John.
Chair's losing her voice. We have to speak up for her. It's okay.
We have continued conversations with Angela Sherbo and the Juvenile Rights Project, and they are hopeful that there will be some dollars restored to system of care, but they have not been specific in their demand or their request as to how much that would be. I think they started the conversation some months ago when they anticipated it might be as much as $5 million. So I'm not aware that Angela knows what these figures are at this point.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on then, the next item of note is two issues down from the system of care issue. This is another project, an information technology-related project, although it's being managed in this cluster because of its programmatic impact. This is another project that, because of discussions with the federal government, has been delayed, and work on it, it was delayed past the time that these expenditures were originally expected, and so those expenditures will be carrying forward into 2003-2005. And like the project we saw in department-wide support services yesterday, these monies would not be expected to be spent in 0103 and would be expected to be available statewide as a reversion, and so that the net general fund impact would be zero between the two biennium. Okay, the other issues I hope are self-explanatory on this page. They're just the continuous system improvement position relates to the elimination of that unit and reorganization of staff that we talked about yesterday. The others are revenue changes, as would normally take place in a departmental rebalance. On top of page two, there's...
Can you go back to... You want to know what the revenue enhancement project that has closed 19 cases of inmates receiving TANF?
No, ma'am.
Total, which one?
I want to go to food stamps.
Food stamps. Food stamp forecast and the related food stamp cash out benefits are projected to be higher. This non-limited federal funds increase of $65 million, this is the program benefit side only. The staffing piece is in the community human services budget, and these are non-limited federal funds. So actually, when we make the adjustments to the budget bill, you won't see a number for these non-limited federal funds, but we're showing them here because it reflects what's happening.
We didn't lose employees over on this side of things.
The food stamp employees, Madam Chair and Senator Carter, the food stamp eligibility workers, and they're in the community human services budget. They're not in this.
Another question on the food stamps.
Representative Smith.
It says the cost is up per household $2.85. Is that per day? And is that because of inflation? The cost of food keeps going up, and therefore the allocation is more? Or how does that work?
More members.
Madam Chair, the agency can jump in here any time, but that is an average cost per case per month figure.
That's a month figure?
Yeah, a whole other $2.85 a month to spend.
Okay, and that's based on, can somebody help me?
Mr. Neely.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, Jim Neely, Deputy Director, DHS. Food stamp benefits are set exclusively by the federal government, and the largest reason there's a cost per case increase at all is because they are somewhat indexed for inflation. So on a yearly basis, the thrifty food plan that the overall food stamp benefit is based on grows slightly based on inflation.
Okay.
But the thrifty food plan is indeed very thrifty, and we find
I have another question about the food stamp program.
Representative Smith.
Now, do we put in requests for food stamps based on need for the total population of those we serve, and then we're given that, or does the federal government decide what our need is and then funds the food stamp program?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the federal government essentially forwards funds to us based on what our caseload is. So
okay.
As our caseload goes up, their quarterly allocation to us goes up as well.
And our caseload has grown.
Substantially.
Yeah, quite a bit, to the point of even having to add extra employees to cover the cases. Is that right?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, beginning with the last biennium, while we earned more employees because the caseload was beginning to go up then, during the last Ways and Means session,
uh-huh.
New employees were not added for food stamps.
Okay.
There were some added in the interim, I think, in special session three.
Okay. Do you have any? Thank you. Do you have any numbers on how much it's gone up, say, in the last half year? As that unemployment has been so steady in the state and it's even risen, I would think that would help drive your food stamp caseload.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, in the last few months, I think the food stamp caseload has gone up on the average of 3,000 households per month, something like that. About 3 years ago, we were at 115,000 households in Oregon. Now we're at about 204,000 households in Oregon, or almost over 400,000 individuals receiving food stamps. We're dispensing $1 million a day in food stamp benefits.
The only thing I have to say is, holy cow. Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cordley.
I'm still trying to clarify what's happening with the food stamp caseload, how it's being managed. I understand that that caseload is increasing. And from your last visit, I also recall you saying that you were anticipating continued growth in the food stamp caseload. How are you managing with no positions added? How is that caseload being managed? I have a constituent, for example, who's contacted me, who works with DHS and indicates that she's got
A.
I'm guilty. a caseload of 800 people. Is that unusual? Is that, help me understand how this is being managed with these huge numbers of people coming onto the rolls.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, you will probably be able to get some increased detail when Community Human Services does their presentation, but just in general, a caseload of 800 is, I would say, not usual. And on the other hand, in fact, we've looked at all sorts of creative ways that we can to manage the larger caseload, including for those households that have either longer certification periods or fewer changes, trying to essentially bank those cases and put low volume cases or high number of low work cases together with a single worker in a processing center, for instance, while other caseload case managers would have fewer cases. I can say that we have borrowed from temporary assistance and needy families staff on the processing side just to keep up with the volume. And don't get me wrong, it continues to challenge us in terms of keeping up customer service in this arena, and that will continue to grow as the caseload grows. Even if we reach a plateau and don't add more, we still have a lot of cases for work.
Excuse me for a minute. When we get into the systems budget or the staffing, the actual delivery systems budget, that with that staffing, we will begin to get in all the details of the food stamp program and the other programs that are delivered by our staff, which is not in this particular budget.
Okay.
This budget deals with 100% of the dollars that we receive and not the positions that actually are carrying out the dollars. That will be in a separate budget, just so you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, if all goes well, we would hope to bring that budget to you next week, early next week.
Okay. And Madam Chair, I'm willing to defer my questions, but not the concern.
I think it's a concern
about the management and your ability, the department's ability to manage this huge growth. And what is required is for the department to be just really direct with us about what that need is and what it's like on the front line for the employees who are trying to manage this need. Thank you.
Okay. And I want to thank Nurse Carter over here. Went to take care of me and brought me some hot lemon with honey. So go ahead, Ms.
Okay. If there's no more questions, then on the page one adjustments on the spreadsheet, we'll move to page two. The top line there is the effect in this budget cluster of eliminating the department-wide support services prorate. If you remember yesterday, you saw a big general fund increase in department-wide support services. This is part of the commensurate reduction in the cluster budgets related to that. And then there's two technical corrections to the governor's budget. In both cases, this saves general fund in this particular cluster. So we get to a bottom line of the agency's reshoot request, and then we get into the recommended adjustments from our office. The first line there is the Attorney General rate reduction. There is an impact in this budget, primarily related on to the child welfare side, the Attorney General expenditures there. The next line reflects the effect of the merit freeze adjustment. Although this is not the field staff, there are positions in this budget related to the policy and program development and oversight. So this merit freeze adjustment would affect them. We have the vacant position savings. Those are the 11 positions we talked about earlier. And the salary and OP other personnel expenses.
And here we go. We're passing it
now. Put it up there.
And services and supplies savings related to those. Then the other co-chair specified reductions. In this budget, the only reductions that the co-chairs anticipated were to carry forward the effects of the December 2002 allotment reductions and to eliminate the position added relative to the Oregon Health Plan to expansion. And so what you see there are the 2003-05 budget impacts of those actions. The first one, there were actually six vacant central administration positions between what was Adult and Family Services and Children and Families. Three of those positions have already been eliminated in other budget actions, but there are three that were being eliminated here then. The second item backs out that OHP, Oregon Health Plan 2 waiver position.
Let's help you out here a little bit.
I'm doing really badly today.
Okay, here's $20. Just go for it.
You want to get out of the room quickly.
Yeah. Let's cover. You can,
okay.
It'll actually get us out 15 minutes earlier, yep. So let's go ahead and do it.
Okay. OHP 2 waiver positions.
There you go.
This was a vacant position, in fact.
Okay.
This was a vacant position, in fact, and it's being eliminated here. Then there was an allotment reduction related to PSU, Portland State University, research and training contracts. And my understanding of this was that there were some savings in PSU staffing and other costs that allowed them to do this reduction. What happens is this agency contracts with PSU to provide research and training on the child welfare side of the operation. And then the last one carries forward $2 million in reductions, and this is for residential treatment and special contracts. Now, I should note that as the agency prepared its reshoot adjustments, in effect, what the reshoot does is fully restore any of the earlier programmatic reductions except for a rate reduction, like took place in the foster care and adoption assistance payments. But to the extent that there were caseload reductions in earlier reduction actions, the effect of the reshoot is to restore those because the reshoot projects caseload and cost needs based on current experience. So, in effect, what this does is carry forward a $2 million reduction in child welfare programs and specifically residential treatment and special contracts. Now, what will happen in the next reshoot is that, or the next departmental rebalance during the interim, is that we would expect the agency to project whatever their needs are based on whatever their projections show. So whether this sticks in effect or not, we won't know. But at this point, it would take $2 million out of the funding for those programs.
Question, and maybe you can help. What problem will occur fiscally, financially, if the we don't get the waiver extended, the TANF waiver extended. I understand that we have a June 30th date, and there's some activity at the federal level with the new block legislation. And can you enlighten me, Ramona, on what the problems are and what do you anticipate as far as a revenue reduction, if you will, or shortfall?
Chair Winters, it will obviously have an impact on this budget and several other budgets, depending on how the reauthorization looks. We're anticipating now that the reauthorization, I believe the last I heard, is it's going to be extended past June, and what we don't have any information on is whether or not our waiver will be allowed to continue. We've taken a position that we need to continue the waiver, and as you see from this budget and other budgets that you will hear from Human Services, any reduction in the temporary assistance needy families can also have an impact here in the foster care program and others. There's also the potential of the waiver. We could lose our waiver that we have in child welfare. We have a 4E waiver that allows us to put services at the front end to keep children from coming into care. It's also tied up with the conversation around reauthorization. So there could be a more direct impact as well as the impact of TANF reauthorization.
What kind of conversation are you hearing back from your federal counterpart with respect to the what we can expect within this short window? Because we have an extremely short window. If we're talking June 30th, that the waiver expires and the new legislation does not include the provision, as I understand it, for the waiver.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we have had a letter that's gone from the governor of the state to congressmen asking them to please give consideration for the states. I think there's 9 states who do have this waiver and who do. It will be very expensive for states to have to sort of re-engineer how we do our eligibility in the TANF program, then to perhaps have to re-engineer it a second time whenever TANF is reauthorized. We simply don't know what that looks like. But the congressmen from Oregon have been very involved in this conversation. There is conversation in Washington, D.C. about the possibility. We're not totally hopeful at this point because the clock is running, and there are only about, I think it's 9 states who actually have such a waiver, and none of those states are large states. Most of those states are the size of Oregon and perhaps smaller, and so it's a very difficult conversation, but one I would say that Oregon has done everything Oregon can do at this point to try to make sure that we get to continue that waiver.
Can you provide me with a list of the 9 states and also the overriding issue, and so I can try to make a call or two?
Chair Winters would be pleased to do that, and we'll also give copies of the correspondence that's gone just this week to Washington, D.C. about this matter.
Okay, thank you. I had that one up.
Okay. Well, move on then to the other LFO recommended adjustments. The first one there is a significant one. This would limit the increase in domestic violence emergency assistance that was requested as part of their agency reshoot, the $4.8 million total, and have the department limit the domestic violence emergency assistance funding to what was in the governor's budget, which is about $9 million. You can see that they're projecting a significant increase in that program, and so it would be challenging to limit it. But what that would allow is that those TANF funds then could be used to offset general fund, not necessarily just in domestic violence emergency assistance, but in the other TANF program, and free up $4.8 million of general fund. And you may want to have some discussion with the agency as far as how what the impact of that would be and how that would be managed.
Yes, I do want to hear from them as to how that would be managed.
Madam Chair, we are currently looking at the regulations and the policies around domestic violence emergency assistance to see not only what this impact would be, but to make sure that the criteria by which the program is designed and how it's implemented are actually the best criteria that we should have. We have several staff that are interested in this issue, and our SDS service delivery area managers are going to be taking this matter up in a month. We realize that with reduction, what we have to do is make sure that those individuals that are the most vulnerable of victims would still be able to access this type of service, and at the same time make sure that the criteria is realistic in that, like many other programs that are being reduced, it may actually increase the standard for who qualifies to receive this kind of assistance. But we are currently looking at the regulations. They've been in, the current regulations have been in place for a couple of years now. But in the face of this type of budget, we think that that's the only way, and perhaps this would be a group that would want us to come back as we do that over the next month or two to say exactly what the change might look like and what the impact might be in the number of victims served and how we would go about serving those victims.
Senator Card? I'm sorry, Doug.
Could we have increased your other fund dollar or to the point that would make up for the amount of general fund dollars that we're taking out? Because, Madam Chair, I have to tell you, if we get to a point in this state where they have to decide who's the most victimized among victims, I think that's a hard thing for them to make. But I think it's a shame on us kind of statement to have to make. If they have 10 domestic violence victims, and then they got to decide which among the 10 is the worst off. I mean, that's a cruel thing for us to even do. So I'd like to know that, too, but I also would like to know if there are other fund dollars that could have made up the total loss that you're experiencing.
Madam Chair and Senator Carter, I think I would yield to Ms. Baker on whether or not there are other fund dollars to make up, but we would agree with you that when we start having to sort which victims are the most victimized, it will be difficult, but that's why we'd also welcome the thinking of this committee as we go forward with that project to see exactly are we making some of the wisest choices that we can make.
Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, in looking at this budget, I didn't identify any other source of dollars that could be directed specifically to backfill here.
Representative.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. First off, you said you might bring us back to this group in a month or two. I hope you don't bring it back in 2 months, because I hope we're not here in 2 months, okay? I heard that, and just, you know, a little chill in the room. What does this really mean when you're looking at that kind of a cut to your budget? The TANF money may or may not be there, from my understanding. What would your original budget, how much would be left if the TANF money didn't come through, and what does that really mean in services?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, the TANF money, the current amount that we get so far is really not in question in terms of what Congress is likely to allocate. So far we haven't seen proposals that would cut the amount. The requirements in terms of how we serve individuals in the jobs program may cause us to use some of that money differently. I think what we have here is pretty much a budget that reflects what we've done in the current biennium in terms of emergency assistance, domestic violence. And I think one of the issues that has pushed up usage such that we see in the reshoot considerably higher level is the fact that the regular emergency assistance program has gone away. So that, I think, puts increased pressure on this program.
Sheila, have we looked at all of the various dollars that are in various areas of programs as it relates to domestic violence? We ever kind of wrapped our arms around? There's some over, was some over in corrections. There's kind of pots just here and there.
Madam Chair, I haven't taken a look recently at all of those. I do believe that in Department of Justice, that their domestic violence funding was at some point anyway at risk of reduction, but I believe that it's being restored. I can get that information and get that.
Yeah, I would like to know how much and where those dollars are. You know, what's in Department of Justice and what we have within children and adults and families, and if there's some others out there someplace. I think we need to have some sense and of how much, and also if there have been reductions, what those reductions are since the, you know, the 01-03 budget.
Question.
Senator Carr.
Mara, do you guys send out a report? Is it possible for me to get from you, say, 90 days from now, or either at a time you deem that you can see a difference in the effects of $4.7 million out of the domestic violence piece?
Chair Winters and Senator Carter, I would say that prospectively we could develop such a report. We do have management information that will tell us how many victims are accessing this particular funding source by county or by SD service delivery area. And we could look at that over the next 90 days to see what the impact would be based on perhaps, say, the last year in comparison, to see if fewer people access or if they access for less money
right.
as it begins to diminish.
Madam Chair, follow-up. It doesn't have to be a very sophisticated report. I just like to keep this before the emergency board, you know, how you guys are having to manage this piece, because I think that becomes a little much when you have to sort between who's the worst of the victims that you are trying to help.
We'd be glad to do that.
Is there any information or trending information that you have that shows the increase in domestic violence because of what's occurring now with the high unemployment rate? I know that that used to be some data that we tracked years ago, that there's the assumption that when the employment rates are down and families are feeling more pressures and frustrations, that the domestic violence issue goes up.
Chairman Winters, I don't have data with me on that particular issue. We can certainly look at that because we are just about to release the 2002 child abuse and neglect statistics. And what those will show is that the unemployment rate, the domestic violence, parents with drug problems, and parents known to justice systems has become a big contributor. We expected it would, but is a big contributor to children in the child abuse and neglect system and children coming into out-of-home care. So that finding wouldn't surprise me. It's just that I don't have that data, but we can check that.
Ms. Pate?
I would note for the committee that on this two-page sheet that shows the program comparison, the emergency assistance domestic violence is on there. It's the third line down. That this proposed reduction, if you look at the last column, it would eliminate that $4.8 million in the last column, return funding back to the governor's budget level, which is about $9.3 million. Which is higher than we started out in 2001, 2003, but lower than where we ended up in 2001, 2003. So just for comparison purpose, that would be the numeric effect, and then there's caseload and estimated cost per case information under that. So it doesn't give you the programmatic sense, but it shows you the numbers associated with this proposed reduction. Moving right along then. The next recommendation is significantly easier to make. That's to eliminate some empty limitation related to eliminating separate funding for the Jobs Plus program, there was some food stamp limitation still remaining in the budget that, in effect, we don't eliminate non-limited limitation, but we wanted to show it there as in terms of a reduction of the estimated non-limited federal funds that they would be using. So we have a bottom line budget recommendation there. And if you go back to the memo, in the middle of that second page, there's a proposed budget note related to the Jobs Plus program. As I indicated, the separate funding for that has been eliminated, but there was some interest in allowing the agency to continue to use that Jobs Plus mechanism where it made sense for them. And so this budget note would direct them to use Jobs Plus where, basically, if funds are available within the jobs program and where it makes sense for clients.
And this budget note was worked out with the agency and all others concerned, and there was complete agreement to this particular budget.
Could you, Madam Chair, could the department provide an example of when that might be necessary to do?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, the Jobs Plus program is what we would consider a worksite training or worksite engagement program. Those tend to be relatively more expensive than something like Work Search. So those programs are limited to individuals who typically don't have much of a work history or a resume that need that sort of intensive mentoring and work site training to help build that resume and help build some job skills.
This is where we're at now.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Gordley, I remember what last session, and there was a lot of discussion about the Jobs Plus, and I offered that I happened to have one of my employees who was in Jobs Plus, and as the employer, with this particular employee, it was very hands-on.
Same point.
It was very everything from. You had to pick them up to get them to work. I mean, it was all there. So that client population is, and I think most people don't understand that because they keep saying, well, how come, you know, it costs so much? That client population is similar to what we used to do back in the really old Office of Economic Opportunity days when the Department of Labor began to do its outreach and really began in some instances you have to literally hand feed the person. And everything from grooming to being on time to providing transportation to get them to and from and to actually get them in the habit of working. And I am very happy to say that that person right now has a very, very good job who has still been employed after leaving my place of occupation, and he looks absolutely wonderful. So that hand feeding and helping him get back into the work world was very much worth the investment. So I know we had to restrict the program, but I was pleased that we are doing the budget note to allow the agency, when they come across individuals like that, that within their discretion and within available resources, that they're able to do that. This person is now a taxpayer and who's contributing back, and he had been out of the work system for years. Just had to put that one in there because I know that sometimes everybody thinks that, you know, it's kind of easy to get people back into the work market. And there, we do have a population that's extremely difficult. So. Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I'm supposed to be quiet.
You're resting your voice. I just had a couple of questions about the April rebalance versus the reshoot and a couple of line items. The domestic violence we just talked about, if I'm reading this right, goes from 10 to 14 million in 0103 to 0305. Am I reading that correctly?
Madam Chair, Representative Page, yes, I believe you are.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm clear on that. And dropping down to employment-related child care, which is three up from the bottom of that page, I heard testimony earlier that employment-related daycare is or child care is one of the key factors in getting people back to work, allowing them to go back to work. That number is down almost $8 million from the April rebalance. Is that because there's less people applying for it? Have we cut rates per day? My memory, we were cutting rates per day, but I may be wrong on that. Do you remember the reason this has gone down?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, there were a number of reductions in the employment-related daycare program earlier this year. We think that probably has something to do with the rate of request for that program. We can't say how much is related to a particular reduction versus how much is related to a decline in folks going to work and thus needing employment-related daycare. Some combination of those two.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
So what you're really saying is the decline we're seeing here is a projected cost based on less of a request, not a cut in rates or something of that nature. It's really you have less people applying for the program.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, at this point, yes, that's what the reshoot is based on, our current experience.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
A question.
Representative Smith.
On the left side of the categories, what does CPC mean?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, it's cost per case.
Okay. Going back to what Dr. Bates was talking about, we lost $8 million there, but our caseload only dropped 208. Is that what I'm supposed to look at? What is the cases means? Is a case one person in daycare, or is it one family, or what?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the cases would represent a family. I think on average we're at about two children in
family.
Care.
So, although it sounds like 800 or 8 million, I mean, it is a lot of money, but it's only $208. I mean, 208 cases. Am I interpreting this data correctly?
So, Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, yes, I believe you are interpreting it. I just wanted to summarize, as I remember, what the reductions in that program were. One was to restrict eligibility to people that were at 150% of the federal poverty level, so you would have lost some families there. One was to increase the co-payment amount from a minimum of, I believe, $25 to $43 a month. And then one was to discontinue the policy of when somebody new comes onto the program, they would get their first 2 months of daycare without a copayment, with the idea that then they would be getting settled into their job and be better able to make those copayments. And so there were three changes in practice made in the program, and I think it would be difficult to say, mm-hmm. other than just the eligibility one, what the effect of those other two might have been.
I get it. And that's awesome.
Yeah, let's take it to the motion.
The other issue in front of you that we're supposed to talk about with the subcommittee is the performance measures. And so I've attached another copy of the agency's performance measures and identified in the memo the seven that this cluster is the lead for, and that relates to their TANF. I love having freebies. TANF adults placed for whom employment is a goal, the TANF cases that don't return or otherwise still off cash assistance 18 months after they leave. Teen pregnancy is a measure. Child care providers who provide enhanced quality of care, because one of the issues is making sure that children get good care. The ratio of Oregonians receiving food stamps to the number of Oregonians in poverty, and we had that discussion during work session and the numbers presented to us about that particular one. And then the last two deal with the child welfare side in terms of timing of from between the time a child's last removed from a home and to the time adoption's finalized, and then the percentage of re-abuse for abused or neglected children.
Representative Smith?
Yeah. Now, This is based on the people who are, all these goals, performance goals, are based on the amount of people who are in your program. Or is it, like, for instance, you go down to number 19 and it says, percentage of eighth graders at high risk for alcohol and drug use, other drug use. Is that the percentage of the eighth graders that's in your program, or is that the percentage of eighth graders in the state of Oregon?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, what I attached were all the department's goals, and so that is a performance measure that's not a piece that this program is the lead on.
I beg your pardon.
You'll talk about that one later. But your question would apply equally, for example, to the one about the number of female Oregonians per 1,000 that are pregnant.
Yeah.
It's not just the number of teenage females that are in the DHS programs, it's statewide. And so some of these measures are very high level, and this agency is not the only entity that's trying to address those issues. But because of the programs and supports they provide, the idea is that they need to link to see what impact they are having on those measures.
Well, okay. Thank you. I'm trying to understand the effectiveness of these performance measures. Now, if we go to number 7 there on the second page, the number of female Oregonians ages 15 to 17 per 1,000 that are pregnant. And what our target is we're trying to bring that down. Is that correct?
Yeah.
But how can you bring that down if not all of these pregnant people in this category are in your system, is my question.
You can respond, Ramona, but I know there's... Excuse me.
11 million.
And Ramona.
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, we do have programs that would impact this population. And so what this refers to is we try to see what our efforts are around pregnancy prevention and how that might impact. And some of those programs are not limited to just children or young women known to our system, but would be programs in the public school system, for example. And so the effectiveness of how well Oregon is doing with those kinds of programs is part of this measurement. But we feel we have a critical role in that along with other agencies.
Okay, and follow up. And I would assume that anything that you could do, public service announcements, PSAs, if you're able to do anything like that, I don't know. That all this education that we hear constantly going on is part of an effort to try to educate these women that maybe that's not a good idea.
Chair Winters and Representative Smith, that is true. We do those kinds of things. But I was just asking Mr. Neely, the STARS program, for example, which mm-hmm. is Students Today Aren't Ready for Sex, is one of the programs that Oregon has invested in the past that we believe gets some credit for some of the inroads that are being made in this area. We had a goal, for example, the goal for 2002 was to not have more than 36 young women in this category per 1,000.
Uh-huh.
And we actually achieved in Oregon only 26.7 per 1,000. And so we've done quite well with that particular measurement. And, you know, and if that continues, we shouldn't have any trouble meeting the goal in the 05 target.
Was that women having sex, did you say?
Or
are you targeting the boys too? Is what I want to know. Or is it the pregnancies?
Chair Winters and Representative Smith, it's the number of female Oregonians, but many of those programs that Oregon has do target both the males and the females, realizing that it would in fact take two.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Madam Chair, would you like me to draw a picture?
No, I don't want you. I do not want you to draw a picture, but
I get it.
I don't want you to draw a picture, but I do want to say something, because I do think that it's also important that we're looking at the behavior of the male as well as the female.
Yes, I was trying to make that point. Thank you.
And so, I mean, you may want to look at the number of males who have been impregnated, because this is not just a one-sided issue, and the education has to go to both male and females. And I would ask that you when you're doing your measurements, that we include that that piece. I've often said I would like some of my male colleagues to jump on the bandwagon to talk to some of these young men. It's not a one-sided affair, as you so noted.
I don't know.
And Chair, one of the only difficulty is it is in measuring. It is easier to tell if a woman has a baby than it is whether or not a man has fathered one. So, but we will keep that in mind as we look at our research.
I think, you know, creative minds can figure out some way that they can get those statistics back from the guys.
Madam Chair.
Child support statistics would be very helpful. Ms. Baker, now that we've had the battle of the sexes, Representative Baker.
A couple of things. First, I'd like to be able to move my chair to a different position, with your permission, if I could. Secondly, a performance measure of 39 and 41. I want to make sure that I'm reading this figures right. The percentage of pregnancies that were unintended or were terminated. Different cluster.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, that's a performance measure that Health Services is the lead on, and probably the discussion we've ever had.
I was wondering, my question is, why is it here and what does it mean? So I'll wait until that happens.
Thank you. Any further questions? Please
don't forget to ask
that.
Madam Chair, if we're done with the performance measures discussions, then I would suggest that you entertain a motion to preliminarily approve the recommended budget, with the understanding, of course, that as we move through all of these discussions, there are changes that would be discussed to that. But move the recommended budget, then move approval of the budget note, and then the performance measures.
Senator Carter moves.
I move that preliminarily the recommended adjustments to governor's balanced budget. I think we'll make a motion.
No. I think we'll take it in the budget now.
Okay.
Senator Carter moves that we accept the recommended adjustment to the governor's balanced budget. As stated by legislative fiscal office. Are there any objections? Well, I still have a voice.
Question, Madam Chair?
Representative Wessler.
We're
on the back page.
We're on 5030.
We're on 5030. What we're doing, what Representative Wessler, is that we're going ahead and preliminary approving portions of the overall agency budget, and then we will come back and put them all together.
So we are not approving the employment-related daycare, child care section at this time?
Yes.
It's part of it.
Yes, we are.
Not a part of our Christmas tree.
It's not a part of what?
Well, it's part of
it. But if we're approving that, my question is, I thought in discussions that we had looked at that figure, analyzed the $88,308,000 in the reshoot, and that it was determined that there was some validity in reducing that number by $11 million, which would still allow the first, I believe it's 2 months of the program, two or three, Sheila?
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Westland, the $88 million here already anticipates the reductions that were made in the interim for the changes in eligibility and the changes in the co-payments and the timing of making the first co-payment. Our expectation would be that if there are any add-backs to this budget, that would happen either at the final work session for the budget as a whole, or in an end-of-session bill, if there is such an animal. And what our preliminary recommendation includes is the governor's budget as adjusted by the agency reshoots, as adjusted by the co-chair's reductions, as further adjusted by the recommended adjustments that we're showing here. But generally, those do not entail potential add-backs that have been under discussion.
Madam Chair, what I hear you saying very sincerely to me is that this requires a yes vote, and this is still under consideration.
You're absolutely correct.
I am here to absolutely help facilitate this process, Madam.
Thank you very much. Are there any objections? Hearing none, approved. Senator Carter.
Madam Chair, move the budget note regarding Job Plus program.
Senator Carter moves that we accept the budget note pertaining to the Jobs Plus program as stated by legislative fiscal. Is there any objection? Approved.
Madam Chair, move the performance measures as itemized and recommended by LFO.
Senator Carter moves that we accept the performance measures as outlined by LFO. Only with I would like the agency to explore the feasibility of including males in the other subject category.
Stand for record.
Are there any objections? Hearing none. So on. Thank you. And there's no meeting scheduled for tomorrow, so but I will see you on Monday. Reverend Westland, we will be doing packages like this of all of DHS's budgets, and then we will come back and put them all in as one package.
I understand.
Kind of similar to what you had advised me last session when you were the co-chair.
I understand the methodology. It's a good methodology. May I inquire as to your voice, Madam Chair?
Well, two things. One of our good senators on the other side has, I think, passed around a germ. Either that, I got it on the plane coming back, sit it next to the other senator, but she doesn't have it, coming back from Washington. In any event, some bug has hit their vocal cards. And in addition to that, somebody pinched my fingers last night and got a sliver in it, and the good doctor was supposed
right
to get it that taken out, so your chair is pretty much banged up today.
I think that was Bates that pinched your finger. He's just trying to, you know, get billable hours.
We are adjourned until Monday.